Election College, Episode 155, Governor William Goebel.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Jason, we've done a lot of episodes about politicians and elections and presidents and stuff like that, but there haven't been many episodes specifically about governors or any other positions. So why not start with William Goebel? Seems like a great, interesting guy.
Yeah, this is one episode that I've been looking forward to for, probably the last 6 to 8 months. I know in the two surveys that we've done since we ended the chronological order of the history of presidential elections, many of you have made comments saying, hey, we want to hear about the gubernatorial races and the senatorial races and the congressional races and so on. So here we are. Who better to begin with somebody from Kentucky? And Ben, both you and I share this heritage from deep down in the heart of Kentucky. So here we go.
We're direct descendants of William Goebel.
No.
That may not be true.
Not true at all, Ben.
So William Goebel, if you haven't heard of him, is a guy we're going to talk about. He was born in January of 1856, and he was actually born in Bradford County of Pennsylvania, not too terribly far from me. And his parents were immigrants from Germany, and he was an oldest child, but he was a fighter from the beginning. He was a fighter all of his life, really, but he was a fighter from the beginning. He was premature, and he was less than 3 pounds when he was born. So from the very beginning, he was coming out swinging, basically.
Yeah, and like any good German from Pennsylvania, you don't know how to speak English until you're 6, right? Well, maybe not, but that was the case with him. So about the time Goebel is 7 years old, his dad is discharged from the army, and they move from Pennsylvania to Covington, Kentucky. And for those of you who don't know where Covington, Kentucky is, it's the city immediately south of Cincinnati, Ohio. And that is where William attended school and became an apprentice jeweler over in Cincinnati.
That's quite the ride. He's an apprentice jeweler and becomes a governor later on.
Yeah.
Interesting. So he went to business college for a little while, and like Jason said, he was an apprentice there. And then he was also an apprentice at a law firm, like, as we've said many times, all good politicians are. He was the apprentice of John Stevenson, who had previously been a governor of Kentucky. And eventually, Goebel becomes Stevenson's partner. And he graduates from law school, but then eventually, after some further schooling, he withdraws to take care of his family. His father had passed away and just needed to get some work done. So he goes into private practice and then ends up joining up with a state representative for about 5 years and becomes law partners with him.
Yeah. So before we get into some of the chronology about Goebel's life, let's talk a little bit about the man. He wasn't somebody that you would probably have over for your New Year's party, all right? He wouldn't smile at you. He wouldn't shake your hand. He wasn't particularly good with the ladies. And as a matter of fact, he was the only governor of Kentucky who has never been married. And he has been he's been described as being reptilian in appearance. So he's probably somebody that Ben, you and I, he wouldn't do well in our family.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I mean, we're kind of sarcastic and maybe even a little bit sardonic at points, but we're not sticks in the mud. And I get the feeling from Goebel that he was kind of a stick in the mud kind of guy and didn't really, you know, have a lot of fun. But at any rate, he got a lot of good stuff done and did a lot of things that people seem to enjoy, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so Goebel, he is known for being very, very smart. And let's get into some of the background. So, Ben, you know a little bit about Kentucky history. You know about the Hatfields and the McCoys. And
yep.
You know about how Kentucky was very divided in the allegiance that particular individuals, I was going to say families, but really individuals had in the era of the Civil War. As a matter of fact, Henry Clay, some of his relatives, fought on both sides of the Civil War. Mary Todd, President Lincoln's wife, she had relatives fighting on both sides. So there was a lot of contempt among people who had Southern sympathies and Northern sympathies. And Goebel, well, his family lived in Pennsylvania for a while, but he spent his childhood in Northern Kentucky, which tended to be more favorable towards the Union.
Right. And his father actually fought for the Union and then moved to Kentucky, which, of course, Northern Kentucky was for the Union side, mostly at least. But you have to imagine that it was kind of a difficult situation for him. I mean, his family is not native to America. I mean, they're German immigrants, and they come here, and dad wants to fight for the Union. I mean, there's not a lot of things more honorable than that, I would say. And they're very much abolitionist, huge civil rights for women, for black people, for anyone who's oppressed. And then they moved to Kentucky, which, even though it was split up a little bit between Union and Confederacy, there's a lot of people on both sides. And so you have to imagine that the environment he was raised in, and of course he was raised during the Civil War period, was confusing and difficult, I would imagine.
Yeah, and you can imagine the situation with Kentucky, and we could go way into this, but a lot of the people in Kentucky, especially those who were voting and, well, let's face it, had the money, they also had slaves. And this was quite upsetting when Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, because you had slave owners who may have been loyal to the Union. Well, they were just outright in disagreement with Lincoln. So if you had any sympathy towards the Union and you found yourself in that situation, well, you were completely turned off. And that's where Kentucky, let's just say it this way, the movers and shakers, they really did not like Lincoln. They did not like Republicans.
Right. So, of course, when Goebel goes to work for Stevenson, which we mentioned a few minutes ago, Stevenson brings him around to the idea of the Democratic Party or the Democratic ideas in general. And Goebel works for Stevenson. He's the chief counsel for the Kentucky Central Railroad. And he becomes kind of an expert in these contracts that they have and how the railroads work. And he starts kind of seeing how businesses crush the little guy and how they take advantage of their workers and they put profits ahead of everything. And he realizes there's no laws for this and there's no way to address this. This isn't good. And you have to think that some of the ideas that his parents instilled in him with equal rights for people had a lot to do with this and influenced his beliefs and practices as he went on. And so when Goebel went into private practice, he starts going after these big corporations and railroads, and he goes after the huge railroad networks, and people just start coming to him in droves saying, "Will you help me? Can you help me? I can't defend myself and I don't have any money. And the railroad is taking advantage of me."
He ends up going after the LNN, which is the Louisville and Nashville Railroad, big time. And over a 15-year period, he tries a ton of cases against the railroad and wins every single one. And these were huge settlements. And by the time Goebel is 30 years old, he is a well-to-do man. But there's a lot of people who don't like him. So keep in mind, we've already said that the Republicans don't have a boatload of fans in Kentucky at the time, but the Democrats are fragmented as well. And we'll get into a little bit about that when we talk about the convention before his election to become the governor. But ideologies didn't necessarily jive with your political party in all realms. It is a little different today. Well, maybe not.
So 1887 comes along and Goebel wins his first election. He gets elected to the state senate, and it doesn't take long for him to be well respected. So, of course, he's going to keep sticking up for the little guy, and one of his first bills that he introduces actually brings down the toll charges on roads in Covington. And, you know, the road is owned by a corporation, and the road is profitable, and the state is, you know, kind of responsible for the fact that the corporations were able to build them. And he is in a heck of a time with some people who were pretty angry because they had bought stock in that corporation. And so John Sanford is one of those individuals, and he ends up blocking Goebel's chance to become a judge on the Court of Appeals. And Sanford has some friends, I guess you could call them, or probably not really friends, but they were high up there, and they were important people in the community, and they were, of course, you know, we're going to play them as the bad guys. They were ex-Confederates, and any kind of politics that happened there in town, they were going to be somewhere in the mix. They were going to be in charge of them in some sense or another. And so anytime they had the opportunity to do so, they would just mess with Goebel and cause him a hassle.
Yeah. So Goebel, keep in mind, he is all about, you know, getting women to be able to vote for school board members and to serve as school trustees, as well as be members of boards of education. And then he wanted more rights for African Americans. And he wanted regulations for doctors and to have prison reform and to get rid of those nasty tolls that, well, as Ben said, the corporations kind of ran. And he was not a friend to bankers. So he was making enemies on all fronts. Republicans, he didn't like at all. And they didn't like him. And Democrats, especially those who were, well, more aligned with the former Confederacy, they didn't like him either. So he is ticking off just about, I would say it like this. He's really ticking off the man, because you had the big corporations, you had some of the government interests. He was really this champion for women and African Americans and the common man. And the Sanford guy, well, he's going to come up a little bit later.
So you can see how Goebel is really starting to tick people off, as Jason said. And no one was more upset with him than the big guys at the L&N Rail Company, the Railroad Commission. And Goebel has this list of all these regulations he wants to be enforced on the railroad. He wants to protect the Railroad Commission. He wants to make the railroads pay their fair share of taxes. He wants them to stop messing around with the business of the state, because you have to think that the lobbyists were everywhere. They were going everywhere. They were giving out passes, money, food, booze, anything that they could to get some influence in a government that would make them money in the long run. Not that that's anything like what we have now in this country. That's totally abstract from what we have. But it was a big issue then, too. So the Railroad Commission had actually increased the valuation on this property that L&N owed. And they increased it pretty dramatically. And the guy who's in charge, who's on the board of directors, he's like, I need to fix this. I need to go make friends with a bunch of legislators. I need them to get rid of the Railroad Commission. And the bill passes the House. It doesn't pass the Senate. Goebel's like, I am launching a committee. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
Goebel's local district of Kenton County keeps on electing him to the Kentucky Senate. And his fellow senators elect him as president pro tem in 1895. Well, not everybody in Kenton County was happy that Goebel was doing so well. In comes John Sanford. I mentioned a few moments ago that we'd bring him up. Well, here he is. He hates the fact that Goebel repeals the toll roads. And Sanford gets a group of citizens to oppose the increase in tolls on the Suspension Bridge, or the John Roebling Bridge, which, if you've ever been to Cincinnati, it's a beautiful suspension bridge that served as the prototype for the Brooklyn Bridge. I could go on and on about it. But anyway, Sanford had invested heavily in that. And you have several thousand people who live in Covington, Kentucky, and work in Cincinnati. And they're crossing that bridge back and forth. And it's pretty important that they're collecting money. Well, Goebel moves the city, the county, and the school's deposits from his bank to the First National Bank of Covington. And Sanford was pretty ticked off about this because his investments are not making it into his bank. They're making it into Goebel's buddy's bank over at the First National Bank. So Sanford blows his top and says he is either going to kill Goebel or be killed.
So it's almost like he, you know, challenged him to a duel, but maybe not. So,
but not really, no, because sure. You always swear allegiance in Kentucky that you're not going to have participated in a duel to be in any office whatsoever. We've talked about that before.
Of course. Yeah. You had to do that. There's a shooting. We're going to just go there. We're going to jump the gun and just hop right into the fact that one of them shot the other one. Goebel and a couple friends are headed towards the First National Bank, and they're walking around in downtown Covington, and Goebel's holding his overcoat, maybe over his left arm or something, and they're getting close to the bank, and hey, there's Sanford right there in front of them, standing on the bank steps, leaning on the railing with his left arm and his right hand mysteriously in his pocket. And there's some dialogue, and hey, there's Sanford, and Goebel's like, yep, and blah, 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 blah. I'm gonna keep out the choice words because we're a family podcast. And so Sanford greets Helm and Hendrix, which are, of course, Goebel's friends. And he shakes hands with his left hand, which, of course, is not the hand you shake hands with. That's the whole reason for shaking hands with your right hand, is to make sure you don't have a weapon, which he leaves in his right pocket. And he's like, hey, Goebel, there's some newspaper articles that have been out, and I want to know if you wrote them, because they said some bad stuff. And Goebel's like, yep, sure did. And Sanford draws out his right hand, has a revolver, shoots right at Goebel's abdomen, and misses. Well, he doesn't really miss, because he hits him in the coat and, you know, kind of nicks his vest a little bit, too. Doesn't actually hit Goebel, the person, just his stuff. And, of course, as soon as Goebel sees Sanford reaching for his gun, he steps back, throws his coat on the ground, pulls his pistol out of his pocket, and immediately shoots back. And he does it pretty stinking quickly. He shoots him right in the forehead, and Sanford falls down on the steps, unconscious, and dies about an hour later.
Yeah. So there are witnesses, and they say that, yeah, Sanford, he drew his revolver first. He fired the first shot, and the county judge said, well, Goebel, it looks like he tried to kill you first, so you're out of here. Go and do your thing. So Goebel chills out for a little while. He really tries to take charge of the Democratic Party in Kenton County, which he does, and that's a big deal because, well, the Sanford allies were the ones who were in charge, and he basically calls them names and turns the tide, and, well, he earned the nickname the Kenton King. And in 1889, so in 1899, He's tired of wrangling with the governor because he's like, I want to get things done. And if you know anything about the history of Kentucky politics, if you have a party convention, well, it's going to last a long time and there's going to be a lot of hooting and hollering. And that's exactly what happens in June of 1899. So you've got a group of Democrats convening in Louisville for their convention, and who will be nominated as the gubernatorial candidate. And they go back and forth, and we could have a whole episode just about this one convention. But for the sake of brevity, know that Goebel comes out on top because he's very good and very shrewd at making his enemies look horrible.
So you just want to skip the whole drama that happened there. And
but we should say,
cut down maybe, to where it says about William Jennings Bryan. Okay. We should probably interject here that William Jennings Bryan, we've talked about him at length before, and he's such an interesting guy. We could probably talk about him at length again in the future if we really wanted to. But anyway, Goebel had hooked him up in the past, and William Jennings Bryan is like, okay, I'm going to come to Kentucky to help you out because I understand that it will help you, but I don't like it. And I like what you stand for, but I hate the fact that you use profanity, because as we know, William Jennings Bryan's a very religious man. And in the 1900, that was a pretty horrible thing to do, is use profanity. So is that all that says about him? I thought it said more about him somewhere.
Oh, I don't know.
So William Jennings Bryan comes to town, helps Goebel out, and helps him win the nomination, of course. So we just wanted to, you know, introduce William Jennings Bryan into the story here. But
yeah, so what it comes down to is you've got Goebel running against the Republican William Taylor. And to put it in layman terms, Taylor and the Republicans represent corporate America. They represent the railroads. And Goebel, he represents the population, the average person. He is your populist candidate. So in the general election, the Republican, William S. Taylor, beats Goebel, but by only 2,383 votes. And the Democrats in the General Assembly say, hang on a second here. There's some voting irregularities in some of the counties, and the Board of Elections, they were created by a law that Goebel had passed called the Goebel Election Law. And this group was manned by three handpicked Goebel Democrats, say, yeah, yes. Hey, General Assembly Democrats, you are right. You need to count these ballots. And the Kentucky Constitution says that the power to review elections is in the General Assembly. And, well, hey, buddy, Democrats in the General Assembly, you need to invalidate some votes. And that's exactly what they do. They invalidate enough Republican ballots to give the election to our buddy William Goebel. Now, the Republicans, they were pretty fired up about this, but let's just put it this way. There was almost a civil war in Kentucky because of all of this. Now, it's interesting to note that Taylor, during this period, serves as governor for about 50 days from the middle of December towards the end of January, which is where we will pick up.
Yeah, so Goebel is hearing all these rumors about, hey, dude, you're going to be assassinated. And so he decides to get a couple bodyguards in order to walk to the old state capitol so that he can be sworn in. And there's a lot of differing reports, and of course, we'll never know exactly what happened, but some people said there were about five or six shots that came out from a nearby building, and one of them strikes Goebel right in the chest and wounds him pretty seriously. And so Goebel is laying on the ground, having been shot in his chest, tries to reach into his pocket for a pistol and tries to get back up. And his friend Jack Chin says, "Lie down or they'll shoot you again." So Goebel, you know, stays down.
Yeah. So the next day, they cart Goebel back to the hotel where he was staying at. And he's clinging on to life. And doctors expect him not to survive. But guess what? The next day, he is still conscious. And he is sworn in officially as governor. Now, Taylor had ordered the militia to come. And you have got this crazy situation going on in Frankfurt because you've got the militia out. You got some pretty fired up Democrats. You got some fired up Republicans. They've all emerged in the state capitol. And Goebel is now the governor. He signs the proclamation saying, "Hey, this militia that Taylor called up, tell them to go home." And this might be a little beside the point because you have a man who is dying being sworn in as governor, but the Republican commander of the militia says, "Nope, we're going to stay here." And there are 18 doctors on hand. And by the time February 3rd, 1900 rolls around, which is just a couple of days after he was shot, he dies. And his last words allegedly are, "Tell my friends to be brave, fearless, and loyal to the common people."
So there's a lot of tension before Goebel gets shot and dies. And of course, after he dies, a lot of that tension starts to go away, at least with regard to the election. The people of the state like the lieutenant governor selection a lot better, J.C.W. Beckham. And he's a lot better option for a lot of people than, you know, going into a civil war over who actually won the election. So there's a committee that gets together and they try to come up with a compromise, and they ask the Republicans to recognize, hey, Goebel won the election rightfully, and therefore Beckham should have the right to govern. And also Republicans, in the meantime, get the militia out of here. We don't need them. In exchange, we'll go ahead and if you have any ties to the assassination or anything like that, we'll give you immunity, which, by the way, is like a pretty big gift, if you ask me. Right. And we'll also, we won't contest any other elections for the state offices, and we'll even work hard to make sure that this Goebel election bill is turned into something a little more nonpartisan. And so, you know, all Taylor has to do is sign it and it becomes official. And Taylor's like, "Nah, I'm going to be governor, whether I'm governor or not."
Yeah. So there are a lot of people who are thought to be the assassin, but nobody actually was ever convicted of being the actual killer of Goebel. One story has that the Secretary of State, who was actually Taylor's Secretary of State, Caleb Powers, that he was the guy who did it. But yeah, he was never actually proven guilty. Taylor ended up fleeing. He left Kentucky, went to Indiana, and by the time 1909 rolled around, everybody who had been alleged. So what it all boils down to is nobody has been conclusively been identified as the killer. So while nobody has been conclusively identified as Goebel's killer, we can definitely say that this was a very partisan issue. Basically, if you are a Democrat and you are serving in the General Assembly, if you're serving on any number of courts in Kentucky, well, you're going to do everything you can to nail somebody. And if you're a Republican, you're just going to try to put this behind you.
There you have it. The legend of William Goebel. And, you know, we might do some more of these governor episodes, governor-centric episodes, and we'd love to hear from you which governors or senators or representatives or whatever it is you might hear, you might think are interesting. We really do value feedback from our audience, and we very often take those into consideration and even do episodes out of them. So you can send us a message on social media through Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Look us up at Election College on all of those. And even if you don't have any ideas for future episodes, we just really love to hear from people. It brings a lot of joy to our day. We usually text each other and say, hey, did you see who just messaged us? Or isn't that a cool message we just got? So, you know, we're people just like you. We like to get mail. It's fine.
Yeah, and we mean that. So we also do a little song and dance when we get 5-star ratings and reviews in iTunes. If you do find this podcast to be, well, just a bright spot in your week, please do head over. I think it would take about 47.8 seconds to visit electioncollege.com/review. That'll take you over to iTunes where you can do that.
And just in case you're looking for a new fashion, you can check out our Election College t-shirts over at electioncollege.com/store and go ahead and pick one up. You can not only tell people about us when they see you wearing your shirt, you can also help support Ben and Jason. And we put a lot of work into the show and hope you enjoy it. And that's great if you do. If you feel like giving back, we're giving you away through electioncollege.com/store.
Yep. We'll see you next time.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.